VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, alive and in color, more or less. And we'll be there for the whole hour, talking about all the stuff we like to talk about. Unless, of course, you would rather talk about the stuff you'd like to talk about, at which case all you need to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. It's 222-TALK. And we will then put you at the beginning of the list of callers, or at the end of the list of callers, if we have a big list of callers. Anyway, we answer callers before we talk too much about what we do. I will be giving out the trivia question, and my crack research department has informed me that it would be a lot smarter to give it out as we are signing off for the break in the first period than to wait after the break and bring it up. Now, that way, she's saying that you folks get a little head start. You can usually Google these or something. We'll see how ambitious anybody is. I'll either prove her right or wrong today. That's real easy. So that's a little formatting change that y'all might have to remind me of, because I've been doing it the other way for a long, long time now. Anyway, welcome back, all the regulars. We really appreciate you being here. Had a really, really fun show last week. Those of you who are listening might know it got started early and never let up. And we're talking about all kinds of topics that are very, very germane right now. You know, with an aging population as we have right now, and you can see it in this week's jobs report, that's where I'm going with this. There are a lot of people turning 65, 66, 67. Various estimates run from about 10,000 to 14,000 a day. And it's having an impact on the job market, a big one. And I think it's underreported and it's very much understated. So when we rip apart the jobs report that came out this week, then we're going to show you some highlights from it. And I promise you, these are things you will only hear on this program. No one else will tell you this stuff. So don't go away. But first, I think I've probably pushed back discussion of the market this week about as long as I can. But I called the markets the ice cream markets this week.
Why is that?
Rocky Road.
It was an interesting week.
And that was a euphemism for ouch.
It was a really weird week.
I kept trying, though.
Monday and Tuesday, the markets were off just slightly. I mean, it was almost flat. Wednesday, the Fed announced the, which we all knew was going to happen, the rate cut. And the market, then Powell spoke, and they didn't really like what he said, because they wanted him to be almost promising us another rate cut coming, and he wasn't.
And he has to learn something. He has to learn how to talk for 2 hours and not say a darn word.
Not say anything.
In other words, he needs to learn Greenspeak.
Yeah, exactly. He's actually quite good at it, but he's a little more...
He's not mastered it yet.
No, he's a little more transparent than Greenspan and even than Yellen.
But I actually like him.
I do too.
Every time I've seen him interviewed, I've really liked him.
Yeah, he seems like a really smart guy.
Yeah.
He's actually quite entertaining for a Fed economist.
Too.
I mean, yeah.
He's such a pleasant relief from the last three, four, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, so the market didn't like that. It dropped a few hundred points. And then the next day, Thursday, it did the typical Fed pattern, which is one big down day and one big up day. You never know which day is going to be which. Yeah, and that's what happened. It was up. Market was up 300 points almost. And then Trump dropped a tweet bomb, as he is known to do, and he said that we are going to impose 10% tariffs on China. These tariffs had been proposed before. They were on hold, but Trump's going to go ahead with them. They're actually supposed to be 25%. He's only doing 10. I think he's leaving himself room to go up to 25 if China doesn't do what he wants them to do. The real reason behind this is China's just dragging their feet on this deal, hoping that Trump doesn't get reelected and that the next person in the White House doesn't care as much about it and won't make them come to the table and make a deal. Well, that's not sitting well with Trump. He is going to use every trick in his bag of tricks to get them to the table and cut a deal. And so this is the latest one. The market hated that. We saw a 600-point reversal, went from 300 up to 300 down in an instant almost. And the rest of the week was pretty ugly. Friday was down 300 again. It actually, in late trading, came back about 200 points and ended up down less than 100. So that was good news.
Yeah, that was some minor consolation prize that we all got.
Yeah. So for the week, I mean, I was actually surprised how modest the losses were. I thought it would be worse.
Felt worse.
Yeah, it sure did. The Dow was off 2.6%. The NASDAQ took the brunt of it, down 3.9%. And the S&P was down just over 3%. For the year, though, the NASDAQ's still up more than 20%. The S&P is up 17%, and the Dow is up more than 13%. So despite this little setback, it's still been a good year. Unfortunately, a lot of that was recovering from this exact same thing in the fourth quarter of last year. So it continues. It never disappoints. No. It's always interesting.
Midsummer is not an exciting time in the market for bulls anyway. You know, it's never going to bring you your biggest returns this time
of
year.
No, definitely true. So it hurt our stock market, but guess who got hurt worse?
Lots of people.
Well, in specifically China, their market in the 3 days since the Fed announcement, their market dropped 5%, and Hong Kong dropped just under 5%. Russia dropped almost 5%. Mexico was down just under 4%. Emerging markets dropped more than 4%. So we were actually spared compared to some of our peers.
And you listen to the dumb statements coming out of China. Oh, we're going to uncouple from the U.S. Yeah, right.
Yeah, good luck with that, guys.
Yeah. They're also going to have an unemployment rate of about 20% if they try that.
Yeah, and in fact, they are being uncoupled from the U.S., but it's not voluntary. So supply chains are moving right now, and it takes about a year to 2 years to move some of those factories to other countries. And guess what? There's plenty of other countries raising their hands saying, yes, we will do that.
Yeah, so, but what's worse for China? Well, think about this. Once that decision's been made and factories are being built elsewhere,
they're not going to go back.
They're not changing their mind.
That's right. Or it's the percentage chance of that happening drops tremendously.
Some pretty narrow thinking from people who think in terms of 50 years out and 100 years out.
Right. I agree.
It's just crazy stuff.
On a sector basis, energy got hit really hard over the last few days, dropping almost 4%. And utilities were the only sector that saw gains. That energy was a reaction to the China thing. If we're not buying all this stuff from China, you don't need as much oil to ship it over here. And so oil always gets hit when these things happen. You want to give out that trivia before the break?
Yeah, I will. When we come back, I want to hit the jobs report just a little bit and we can get into some other topics. But this week's trivia question, brought to you as always by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. This week's question is about financial professionals, the industry in which we have been working for many, many years now. And this is not particularly something that anybody wants to hear, but here's the question. In a March survey by the Journal of Financial Planning, what percentage of Americans claim to trust financial professionals? And I'm going to practically give you the answer. It's less than 50%. So how many people actually claim to trust financial professionals? All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back and wrap up jobs and some other things. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And I think we will first off remind people that lines are open, 904-222-8255. And then I want to have Adam just wrap up a little bit about the jobs report. They kind of went underappreciated this week because the things that were going on were so incredibly large and important and so on. But here's something that I pretty much guarantee that everybody missed. And that was the Trump administration had an announcement about tariffs. that you missed. They had an announcement about tariffs that you saw, but they had another one that you missed. They got together with the European Union on beef imports, and they've been fighting this for quite some time. Beef imports, back when we started feeding HGH or whatever it is to the cows, EU cut us off, basically, and we've had to negotiate back in. But they've been allocating their beef imports among countries like Argentina, Australia, and Uruguay, and we've been getting a little piece of it. Well, our little piece now just went up about double to 80% can be imported now from our country. And guess what level of tariffs are on them?
I would guess zero.
Big old zero. People do not understand why Trump is doing all the tariffs. And it's the simplest answer in the world. He is using tariffs to eliminate tariffs worldwide. I applaud their efforts. I wish the media would just suck it up one time and tell the truth about something good that's happening. Don't hold your breath.
No, that would not be a good idea.
No. All right, jobs.
Yeah, we can talk jobs a little bit. The jobs report, both jobs reports came in almost spot on their estimates, which is something I have never seen happen before. They're always wildly off in one direction or the other, at least one of the two reports.
Yeah.
But actually, the ADP report came in at 156 versus an estimate of 150,000. And the government report came in at 164,000 versus an estimate of 165,000. So that, for once, the economists got it right.
That's a rounding error.
Yeah.
If that.
So 165, that's a pretty good number. Mm-hmm. Not as good as it's been recently in some months, but not as bad as it's been recently either. So,
all right, we're going to interrupt this because we have a very special call on the line, and we'll pick this up on the other side of the next break. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, guys.
Now, would this be a Mark that we know?
It would be. Look north.
Way north.
Friends in Canada.
Uh-huh.
But not quite that far.
That's a rounding error, just like we were talking about. You get above the Mason-Dixon line, it's all Canada.
That which you shall never cross again?
Yeah, exactly right. It's against the rules now. Bad enough we have to cross the ditch from our house on Saturdays. We're not going to cross the other line. Anyway, Mark just had a significant life event. About 2 days ago, he turned 62. He's my brother, by the way, for those of you who haven't figured this out yet.
Happy birthday, Mark.
Thank you.
I've told all of you that there are still crazy family members who live in places like Minnesota, and this is it. You're talking to him. But
I was listening to your weather forecast as the show is starting, and the weather here is about identical to yours today. So
it's nothing if not changeable up there. We know that.
Well, we always said there are two or three great months in living up north. Yep. In June, July, and August.
It's funny. So you're saying the ice is off the lakes now, right?
Just last week.
Okay, good. Glad to hear.
I was away and got the boats out.
Anyway, because of that significant event, turning 62. We were chatting a little bit about claiming Social Security, and it's not a difficult thing to find out just how complicated this decision is. And first off, Mark had thought it was 62 and a half, but the half thing comes in from what we all know about IRAs and things. It was never changed from the 62 for early claiming that it started at, although we think it should. That is a topic for another day. So the things that we've got to know to do a good claiming strategy, you want to give us a little background on your situation without getting into the weeds too far?
My current situation?
Yeah, the one that would influence whether or not you take it early.
I owned several small businesses, restaurants. By the way, to your listeners, if you ever think about opening a restaurant, call me first.
Yeah. We'll talk you out of it.
That turned out about as expected, so that threw me out on the streets, and I am now gainfully partially employed half-time at a local brewery, one of those businesses that basically brought down my places. But anyway.
So if you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah, exactly. So underemployed, not making as much money as I would like and am historically used to. But I still believe I have value, so I'm looking for a more full-time job and more lucrative. But the 62 thing came up, and realizing that Social Security is an option, I started doing a little research. I'm just beginning it. I probably should have started a couple years ago, but who knew you'd ever turn 62, you know?
I never will.
So anyway, I did a little reading, and there just happened to be an article, which I forwarded to you yesterday from the Times, about some of the issues that go along with it. And it gets real complicated real fast, and there are no easy answers, of course, because our government wrote the rules. But the one takeaway that I got out of it was the thing that they're talking about, the catch-up time. There's no break-even, because you really don't know how long you're going to live or anything.
You can't
like that,
guarantee a break-even date under any circumstances.
Right.
You've heard us talk about our friend Stan, the annuity man, right?
Yep.
The Social Security is nothing more or less than a great big annuity, and I think the best one ever written, because it's the only one that can be funded by the printing press. But as Stan always says, people ask me, what's the rate of return on my annuity? And he said, I'll tell you the day you die. Because that's when we'll know, and not before. Yep. And that's a very good point, one that you just made very well. So disregarding that piece of information that puts it up in the air, what's your next decision point?
Well, at this point, given that taking early retirement, which is pre-66 now, I believe, you lose significantly each year the earlier you start. So that just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And you got to go actuarial tables. I think once you hit 60, you're most likely to make it to 84. Once you hit 70, it's more like 92 or something crazy like that. Basically, if you're still alive, you probably will be alive tomorrow.
Yeah, so if you cross 60, that's a milestone. 65 is another big one.
As our friend calls it, what were the ages on that? 55 to 63 for men. It's a guy Don used to work with, referred to it as the tunnel of death for men. If you make it there, you're looking good.
Well put.
So anyway, obviously sticking out longer seems to be a better option. But there's so many variables, not the least of which is, as I understand it, if you're collecting Social Security, you can still earn an income and not impact your the payments. Is that true?
Your lifetime payments won't be impacted in theory. This is where it really gets in the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
If you are short of your full retirement age and yours is going to be 66 in some months, I believe. Mark was born in 57. So
classic.
He's so much younger than I am. It's hard to compute these things. Anyway, if you are in your age group, is going to be almost 67 to get full retirement age. Now, there are two periods of time before that. The first one is from now until January 1 of the year you turn 67. During that time, if you make a certain amount, over a certain amount, which is, I think, about $14,000, then they will decrease your monthly benefit by $1 for every two that you earn. And when I say they decrease the benefit monthly, I mean monthly. So you make that much money in a month, your next paycheck's going to be down $1 for every two that you earned.
Okay.
But that dollar's not lost. It's credited back to what they refer to as something like an investment account.
Sure.
Which means you'll get it in the future actuarially.
Theoretically, yeah.
Yes.
You have to live long enough.
When I say actuarially, exactly, it implies that you will have to live. So that changes again in the year you are going to turn full retirement age. From January 1 until your birthday, the rules are a little different in that they only reduce your benefit by $1 for every three that you make. So it's a little less onerous. And again, all that money is pushed forward, and on paper, it's not lost. But that is a very minor, minor little piece of the action that happens during the time frame. And I usually put it this way. If I promised you a guaranteed 8% return on your investment for the next 5 years or 6 years, would you take that?
I think that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Well, Social Security promises you exactly that. Every year that you do not file after your eligibility, which happened 2 days ago, every year you wait, you will get 8% more than you would have gotten by claiming today. And when you get up to full retirement age, that 8% deal does not get taken off the table. If you wait any time after your full retirement age, you continue to get your future benefit increased at 8% guaranteed for life. That dwarfs any other cost consideration, but it doesn't dwarf lifestyle situations. We're going to have to take a short break. Is it okay if I put you on hold and we'll come back and start picking it up right there? Okay, thanks. All right, we'll come back and get into the tall grass here pretty soon, because this thing is starting out complicated. It gets worse, believe me. And that's why so many people make mistakes on it. They really need to learn more. So don't go away. We'll be right back. This is the Vanley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanley Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanley.
And I'm Adam Vanley.
And we're going to get back to my brother on the Social Security question right after I remind everybody that the trivia question is still out there. What percentage of Americans trust financial professionals? And it's under half. And I might even go so far as to say it's well under half. How's that? All right, we're back.
19%.
Way too high. It's a great business I'm in, isn't it? I thought you'd get a kick out of that. Yeah. Anyway, the Social Security filing question, early, on time, or late. The one thing you have to factor into it is your need. So you're out looking for a better job to make more money right now. You're still, in my jargon, pretty young. A funny thing happened. You might have been listening over the last couple of weeks where we had a client who's turning 55, and instead of getting bought out and asked to leave, he was rewarded with a bonus and asked to stay because the quality of the labor pool out there is the only thing worse than the quantity right now. As the younger people are coming in, people are finding out that people in our age groups are far better workers, easily trainable, and more reliable. So your odds of getting a job 10 years ago at age 62 were infinitesimal, and today they're really, really good. So just from a pure financial risk standpoint, to me it seems like a pretty good bet. So if you can handle it without filing, you get that 8% increase. Now, there's a couple of other options that we should put on the table. And one of them, even though it's been vastly limited by the most current Social Security laws, it's still available once. That's the file and then pay back and refile later. That means for the first 12 months that you've been collecting benefits, you have the option at any moment to call them and say, stop, and I'm going to pay it back 100%, and it's as if it never happened. So you get your 8% credit for the whole time, and there's absolutely no consequences. You can only do that once, and you can only do it in the first 12 months after you originally file. There are people who will file and suspend, which used to make a lot of sense too, except for one thing. You were born after 1954, and that's not going to help you anymore. Once you file now, unless you pay it back within 12 months, your filing age is fixed for the rest of your life, which means all future types of benefits are dramatically reduced no matter what you do. That's become a little bit onerous where it used to be very flexible. So that once you've made the decision, know there's only one way out of it. I was explaining to Adam on the break, in a case like yours, if you were you're needing cash flow right now and filed and used it, and then all of a sudden this great job jumps into your lap around January or something like that, then you could just go ahead and pay it back, and it's as if it never happened. Your 8% meter starts ticking again. So that is why that can be useful. I would rather not go through the hassle. Plus, you have to pay back every penny, so you got to come up with it somewhere. Not always easy.
Right.
So let's take it out a little while later. You get on the road a couple of years, and maybe you're tired of working at jobs that you don't like anymore, and you just say, screw it, I'm going to do it. Well, you get your 8% increase, and it lasts forever. Every year that you put it off, the guarantees in life are that you're 1 year closer to death. That I can guarantee you. And the other guarantee is that you will get the increase that everybody else gets. And where I'm going with that is that there is a turning point coming in the Social Security system where unless Congress fixes it, everyone's benefits will be reduced by about 21%. So imagine this terrible possibility. You wait and you wait and you wait. You're 62 and here you are 8 years later. Now you're going to file at 70 and get all that benefit. And if that happened to be the year they reduced benefits, what did you wait for, right?
Now, technically, that's scheduled to happen in about 15 years based on the current numbers.
Yeah, you're probably good. As a general rule, if you were 55 within, let's say, 5 years ago, if you had already attained age 55, you're probably going to be good forever. That's the realistic part. But people like Adam are going to be paying more for people like you and me. Now, I have pre-thanked him.
And thank you.
Okay, yeah, now you've been pre-thanked
twice. It's the least I could do.
Anyway, those are also factors that are in play, obviously.
But to me, I think if you really want to look at it simplistically, if you file now, you are going to receive a greatly reduced benefit, and then you are also going to get that reduced because you're working. And that it sounds like you're going to be working for a while at least, so it just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. If you could avoid filing, if you can get by without it, I think that's the way to go. But again, it's really about if you need the money, then take it. But if not, it would financially, it's going to make more sense to delay it.
Yeah. Couple other things. In the Social Security calculation, every month is an independent item. So it does not matter when you file. You will not lose part of your 8% if you file at 65 and a quarter or something like that. Every month is credited for what did or did not happen that month. So an exact date where you might have to wait out a couple months in your mind, it doesn't really make a bit of difference in the long run there. You always have to figure out how much you've collected if you want to try the break-even thing. But there's another very, very strong consideration. You, at 62, what did you say, 83 or so, your life expectancy, or 86 or something like that?
Yeah, got to be something like that, I would think. I should check, I guess.
Well, every year between now and then, there is an inflation adjustment in Social Security benefits. Granted, it's understated. Granted, it's lower than the real cost of living, but it's still there. Imagine compounding for the next 22, 23, 24 increases of 1%, 2%, 3%, things like that. And imagine the difference between compounding that on a vastly reduced benefit versus a full benefit. Mm-hmm. And you are talking about some serious growth differences there. So that is another, to me, an outstanding reason to go ahead and do that. Now, just to make it even more complicated, the list goes on, you know. What if you get a really good job and you start paying in a lot more than you did in some of the 35 years that count toward your benefit? Every year you put in more than 1 year, they take your lowest year out of those 35 and replace it with the current year, which ups your benefit scale by that much because it's the average of those years that you have worked that determines what actual benefit you're going to get. So if you're willing and able to stay in the workforce and make decent money, you're helping yourself in a what would seem like an intangible way, but it's not. It's actually very tangible. So all the pointers point toward wait as long as you can, and yet over half the public files at 62. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I think that's from a lack of knowledge.
If more people trusted their financial advisors.
Touché. Very well done. I really believe the more people know, the more likely they are to wait. The two usual excuses they give are, one, I'm probably not going to live that long. Well, you've kind of debunked that in the first minute. Two, it's going to run out of money. Well, that's not true. It's not going to run out of money. Yes, there is a scheduled reduction in benefits, but you will not run out of money in the Social Security system as long as everybody's still working for a living. Now, if Elizabeth Warren gets in there, then we got another talk coming, but that's not going to happen either. So the factors are very, very strong in saying you should delay if possible. I don't know. I probably confused you more than helped you, but.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious the government, and I don't know how they came up with these rules. It is pretty amazing. But all towards waiting, I'm good with waiting.
Yeah, and you can learn more along the way, too. There are good reference books. There are Social Security calculators online and that sort of thing. But the more you learn, the better decision you will eventually make when it comes to actually filing.
In the age of 3 or 4 years, I'll look more seriously.
Absolutely. All right, well, keep in touch. Thanks for the call. I really appreciate it, and it's such a wonderful topic. And don't fall in the snow.
When you have more time, we'll talk Medicare.
Yeah, okay. I love it. See you later. All right, you've just heard from the frozen tundra that isn't frozen anymore. And if we didn't impart anything else on you today, know that this decision is complicated, and everybody can use a little guidance to make a good decision. All right, we're going to pick up Jim on the other side of the break because we don't have time to even answer a trivia question. So, Jim, hang on. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And this segment is brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great show. Love it always.
Thank you, and thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to take a stab at your trivia. The question was, how many people don't trust?
No, what's the percentage of Americans that do trust financial professionals?
Do trust. 37%?
Too high.
Too high.
Yeah, wow. I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you a freebie because my brother said 19 and I said way too high. I'm going to give you a second chance. I'm not sure everybody caught that, so I think it's
19?
Only fair.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't say it was too high. I said it was way too high.
Well, I heard you earlier say that it's not so great for
No, no.
All right, well, heck, you know, let's go with 13.
Way too high. This isn't getting any better for Adam and me, is it?
Man, we are.
That is so funny.
We appreciate it. Thanks so much for the call.
Okay.
Take care.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Cheryl.
Hi there. I was on the phone with your guy, telling him I wanted to try the trivia question, and I did not hear what that gentleman said.
Oh, no problem.
He guessed 13%,
yes,
and it was too high.
Way too high, I said.
He said 13?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was way too high.
I'm going to say 5.
5, you say. You're too high.
I'm too high?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. People really like us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
If you're looking for prestige, I guess we're looking in the wrong places, huh?
Definitely.
I appreciate it, Cheryl. Have a good one. That's just so sad, isn't it?
It's pretty bad.
Now, I'm going to tell you that there is a subset, which is also not very big, that trusts them a little bit. But we're talking ones that just say, no, I don't trust financial professionals. And with about 2 or 3 minutes left, I'll go over that if nobody gets it, because there's some other interesting things in there. And it's things we talk about a lot that are very germane to us and to all of you who are listening.
All right. So we were talking jobs.
Yeah, we've got to wrap this up.
So we actually set a record, an all-time record in July. There is now 157,288,000 people employed in this country. That number has never been that high in the history of the United States, which is great. The unemployment rate held steady at 3.7%. That was despite about 370,000 additional people entering the job search.
Yeah, between population growth and discouraged workers saying, oh, I might find a job now, and coming in from the cold looking for a job, 370,000 actual more people were in the workforce, and the population increase was only about 188,000. So that's really good news.
Yeah, definitely.
Really good news.
The labor force participation rate hit 63% for the first time in as long as I can remember.
Yep.
So all in all, the top line number was not didn't blow anyone away, but this report is pretty solid.
But the number one thing, I promised you all, listen to this show, you're going to find out the real truth. The number one piece of good news that you will not hear about in Friday's job report was that 363,000 people who have been working for a long time part-time and wanting to work full-time, they got converted to full-time in the month of July. And you know what that means for a consumer-driven economy. They make a lot more money, they get a lot better benefits, and confidence rises. That was shown in the Consumer Confidence Index, which rose sharply to 135.7 versus a 125 expectation.
Yeah, and the recent high is only 137.9, so we're, I mean, it almost hit that
almost
took it out. So, I mean, if things continue like this, that would not be a shock to see that that former high get surpassed.
There are people out there everywhere you turn, in the media, in the politics, everywhere you turn, there are people who are trying to push this country into a recession, and if they can't, they want to push your mind into believing it's a recession.
Yeah, and you can pick and choose the data, too. If you look at manufacturing right now, manufacturing is not growing at the rate that it was last year. In fact, the ISM report came in at 51.2. Anything above 50 is expansion, but last year we were seeing numbers in 56 to 58.
Yeah.
So now we're seeing 51, 52, and that means it's still growing, but it's growing at a lot slower rate.
Yeah, there's discussion going on now with the EU. I told you we settled the beef deal, but there's discussions going on with cars. We have a problem with our car imports and exports in that when we export a car to places like Germany, they'll sock about a 25% tariff on it. But when we import a BMW from Germany, we put about a 2% tariff on it. These are the things that have been going on behind your back for years and years and years. And Trump is saying no. No one has ever claimed that everything that's going on with the tariff wars will not produce short-term pain for Americans. It will. But it will go away, and when it goes away forever. The other thing is if we could get Pelosi and company off dead center, we have renegotiated NAFTA into the USMCA, and it has passed in the Senate, I believe. The House will not even take it up, despite the controlling interests in the House claiming to represent workers and especially union workers. The beneficiaries of the USMCA are going to be blue-collar people and especially union workers. There is no sense to what's going on, and it will impact everybody. And yet, look at the success we're having. Don't believe everything you hear. Just believe it on this show.
It's also kind of funny the amount of time that we dedicate to manufacturing is disproportionate to the actual effect that it has on the economy. Manufacturing makes up, and by most estimates, less than 15% of the total U.S. economy, and it probably gets over 50% of the airtime when you watch the news shows. They talk all about the manufacturing numbers, but it's services that drive this country, not manufacturing.
And the service index was really high this month.
Yeah, and that area is on fire. You look at bars and restaurants are in particular. That the food delivery market is one of the fastest growing markets. People eating restaurant food in their homes is probably one of the biggest growth areas of the economy right now.
Look at all the delivery services.
Yeah.
It used to be kind of limited to pizza.
Right.
Now it's
Chinese
everything.
Food maybe.
Yeah. It's everything, including just groceries. You might cook yourself, but somebody brings them to you.
Yeah.
What a deal. All right, here's a couple things about the Stat Bank. You all have heard us talk about the word fiduciary. And what fiduciary means is very simple. It means that a fiduciary advisor is required by law to place the client's interest ahead of his or hers. And there are about 50% of the people who know, and I'm not sure how many of them really know, but air quotes on the know, they know for certain that their advisor is or is not a fiduciary. But guess what percentage want people want advisors to have to put their clients' interest ahead of their own, which, as you just heard, is the definition of being a fiduciary. 93% of people want that. 50% of people know or claim to know that they do or do not. Well, if you know that you're not working with a fiduciary, isn't it time for some action on your part? We do have, we took our fiduciary oath before we started this business, and we will always be. We also took the oath that if you want to come in and talk to us for an hour, it's no charge, no pressure. Now, let's look at how much people trust us. 2% of people in this country trust financial professionals. 2%. Now, if you want to vastly expand that to people who trust them, oh, maybe just a little bit, you get all the way up to 15%. Folks, we're trying, but we're not winning it yet. We just aren't winning it yet. But trust me, we'll keep trying. Never fear. And we'll do it by all sorts of means, including this radio show, where we hope to see you all again next week. It is an exciting time out there. Strangely enough, the action in the market this week, as negative as it was the last 3 days especially, has not created a situation where it looks like there's going to be a market downturn. The markets are in a long-term uptrend. I expect this to kind of blow over pretty soon. I wouldn't expect that August is going to be a lot of fun, but trust me, we're not in a position where we crash and burn and pull money out yet. We're just not there. So enjoy yourself, get some sun, and get a good night's sleep, and we'll see you next week, same time. This is the Vanley Financial Hour.